Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and as you may know, Family Talk is the listener-supported radio division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for sharing this show with your friends, and thanks for taking us with you wherever you go throughout your day. Now, on this special episode of Family Talk, we're going to discuss a rather somber topic, and that is the topic of miscarriage. Losing a baby is one of the most difficult things a woman could ever imagine or experience, and our guests today are all too familiar with this painful loss and the journey of grief that ensues. Dr. Dobson has invited two couples to join him in addressing this difficult topic, Dr. Walt Larimore and his wife Barbara, and Russ and June Gordon. Between these couples, they have experienced the devastating loss of six babies to miscarriage. But we know that the Larimores and the Gordons are not isolated cases. About 10-15% of all known pregnancies end in miscarriage. Today, in this classic conversation, Dr. Dobson will sit down with the Larimores and Gordons to talk about how they dealt with and how they continue to deal with the grief of losing their children before they were even born. Let's begin the first of this two-part program right now.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm going to start with an overview question. As you look back on those six miscarriages between the two of you, what emotions jump out at you? What more than anything else stands before you as you think about the loss, the tragic loss of those little babies that you will have to wait to meet in heaven?
For me, it was an overwhelming feeling of despair. I could not do one thing to help myself, to help this baby be born.
You're referring to the first one or all four?
All four. And as I had one and then another and then two more after that, I know that I got really, really depressed. And it was just hard to get out of bed sometimes. It was also very frustrating because I could not receive any answers to why. We had already had two children, and the miscarriages came after Scott.
As a real shock.
And it was a real shock because I was healthy, and I just thought we were going to have a big family.
Having lost three babies to miscarriages, when you became pregnant again, Barb, how did that affect you emotionally as you thought about the possibility of being hurt again?
I think I lived on the edge of not even wanting to believe that I could carry this baby to term. It was hard to hope. And every day it was a struggle to, as I said, get out of bed and to do the normal routine things that needed to be done to care for my family. It was a struggle every single day.
June, I ask you the same question. What kind of feelings and thoughts do you have today? First of all, how long has it been since you lost the second baby?
About 8 years.
8 years. Well, what feelings do you have now, 8 years, almost a decade later?
I think that because of the children that we do have and the circumstances that surrounded their births, I don't have a lot of grief over the second one because it was such a miracle that I got pregnant, we felt. And so I didn't suffer as much through that pregnancy. I was 4 weeks along, and within 5 days, I found out I was pregnant, lost the baby, had the pregnancy confirmed, and then had it unconfirmed all within about 5 days. So I also didn't have time to really, you know, emotionally attach to that baby where I did with my first one. So I really had just found out I was pregnant and a couple days later lost it. So it was very different from how we reacted to our first loss. But our first son was 3 months premature, and we went through infertility with him, and all the circumstances surrounding his birth was just so miraculous, and the fact that he survived and has no problems. And to be able to look at Christopher and see the miracle of his life, it really overshadowed everything else. Then we conceived twins, and then our last baby was born with Down syndrome. And so we, you know, had another experience with him. So though we've been through some things, we've brought our babies home. Mm-hmm. And that really helped us through a lot of the grief.
Hmm. And yet there's still tears in your voice as you talk about that.
Yeah.
Walt, there's really no way to put into words what this experience does to a couple, is there? And especially to the mother, but also to the father. I have never, ever been as vulnerable emotionally in my life as I was the night my daughter was born. You know, I mean, I knew it. My heart was on my sleeve, and I'm sure you have felt that way, too.
I remember holding little Kate in my arms, and by that time in my career, I had delivered several hundred babies, and objectively, she was the prettiest baby I had ever seen, you know, I'm sure. But miscarriage, Jim, it's intensely sad. It's horribly frightening, and so few folks talk about what it does to the dad. And so few dads talk. I mean, Russ, it's like, I don't know how it was for you, but for me, it was like guys expected you to be strong and brave, and there's no permission to hurt, to feel empty and to cry.
Is that right, Russ? Did you feel that people minimized the experience of this loss?
Yeah. What I found was that the calls and the letters and the cards that came in were directed at June. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was experiencing my own kind of grief. At first, I think I was a little indifferent to it because I didn't quite understand what she was going through. And it took me some time after watching her grief and going to the Lord and saying, you know, what does this really mean, to see that I had experienced that same loss. And there's kind of a neat story about how through the process of one of our miscarriages, God gave me a name for that baby. Well, it was actually very early on, and then that this little sticky note kept kind of going all over the house, and June finally asked me what it was several weeks after the miscarriage had occurred, and I finally told her that was the name for the baby.
Mm-hmm. Russ, that's an important point, that men typically experience the loss of a child in a miscarriage in a different way than women do, but the discomfort is there nonetheless, and it often does come later for them. Walt, I mentioned a minute ago about people minimizing the pain and the empty arms that are associated with miscarriage. I have written down here several comments that people often make to a mother who's lost a baby, including, don't worry, you can try again, or you have another child at home already. That's like saying to the mother of a teen who's killed in a car accident, I know that you've lost your son or daughter, but at least you have another child at home. That would not help at all. In fact, that would hurt. I do hope that no one would ever say something like that, and yet it does happen. When a mother who's been through a miscarriage is grieving her loss, what do? We go tell her to get over it, in essence. Get over it. That is a very hurtful thing to say.
And some of the things we were told, Barb, this is probably a blessing. That baby was probably just deformed. What a horrible thing to say. I imagine how you feel. Well, if you haven't, three of our babies, we felt them kick, and we felt them move, and then they were gone. And I mean, I take care of moms. I had no idea what it felt like. I had no idea, and I know,
and yet
I don't.
You had witnessed it.
Absolutely. And I know I don't know what Barb felt. I know that we thought, well, the second one will be easier than the first one because we've gone through it. It was exponentially harder. Mm. The third one was exponentially harder than that. And the fourth one, it was just devastating.
How long did it take you to get over it?
it's been 14 years, and I'm not sure that we are.
Barb, have you gotten over it?
Mm-mm. I still remember each one as if it were yesterday, but I have to choose to think differently. I have to choose not to go there, or else I could really spend my time crying an awful lot. But I do thank the Lord for those experiences. I never thought I would be able to say that, but I do know of many, many women that I've been able to comfort and to assure them that maybe one day, not in the too distant future, that they will be able to smile and laugh again and look at a newborn baby and see the joy that that new little life brings instead of grieving and being envious and jealous.
June and Russ, that is why, in fact, you have started a ministry to reach out to those who are experiencing some of what you went through, isn't it?
Right. And I think the biggest thing we're doing is we're saying, we're acknowledging you had a loss. Your baby had value, incredible worth. Mm-hmm. And we just want to say, honor that life in some way. Find a way to honor that life. Go through the grieving process. Get healing. Find healing through this process. It's so important. Otherwise, you tend to get stuck and you don't move forward as a person emotionally and spiritually.
And how do you reach out to those who are there?
We have created a little photo journal album that enables parents to journal their thoughts and their feelings. It walks them through that process. And we have wonderful testimonies of how it's allowed a mom to put the baby someplace, to memorialize that baby. And we found it's brought a lot of healing. It's one of the ways.
Russ, I wish you and June would have been there when we were there. We didn't know to name those babies. Mm-hmm. We did not know that we could ask for them to bury them. We did not know that we could honor them. And it was only when our kids were 6, 7, 8 that we started going back and celebrating those
birthdays.
But we called them birthdays. Mm-hmm. And we were able to, as a family, look forward to the day that we'll see those kids. But Russ, without ministries like yours, many of our listeners may be surprised to learn that 70% of couples who have two miscarriages or more divorce. Mm, yes. And I think a lot of that is because of what you're saying, that no one, or so few people value that loss.
Yes.
They tell us to get over it, you know, to suck it up, to move on, and you can't. It took years, months at the minimum, and years for us to...
Barb, did anybody reach out to you in a proper manner and say the right things? Did anybody put an arm around you and show that they were hurting with you and comprehended even in a small way what you were going through?
Not really. I did have many, many friends who were able to help out, who brought food, who kept the children, who would go on walks with me, who would talk with me, but it was not really conversation that got to the heart of the matter. And even at one point, I had one friend after a few months who came up to me and said, "Well, are you through with it yet?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" "Well, you know, this miscarriage thing." And so, you know, just right there on the spot, I had to choose to forgive her and to go on and just to graciously answer her, "No, there's will always be a soft spot in my heart baby." But
put into words what you think she was thinking. How did she perceive this?
I think she perceived that there is a time of grief that is very specific to the whole population and not specific to the individual or unique to the individual. And it did not recognize stages of grief, which I know that I went through.
Yeah. Walt, what about healthcare professionals? How sensitive are they to this problem? They've seen it. They've seen the tears. And I know you can't generalize, but what have you observed?
Jim, I think it's a truism in medicine that it is extremely hard to minister to another person's pain when you haven't walked their path. And so I'm not sure it's reasonable for our listeners to routinely depend upon their health care giver, their physician, to provide that. And I don't think that most doctors or most of our listeners realize that this grief is very often a more prolonged grief than the loss of a spouse or the loss of a child or the loss of a parent, someone you knew and you held and you loved. And the loss of that type of person is overwhelming. It's huge. But in general, it seems that the loss through miscarriage, the loss of a child very early in its life, seems to have a deeper and a much more prolonged impact. Depression's much more likely in a woman who's had a miscarriage than in a woman who's had a baby.
I know that what you just said is true because I've read it and heard it and seen it. But most of our listeners will not have known that. That's new information, that the loss of a baby through miscarriage is as profound or more so than any other death. And if you understand that, then you know a little more about how you need to approach the person who's going through it. June, did anybody reach out to you?
Yes, I had a lot of support. People listened. They were there. They cried with me. They held me. But when I really started thinking back to what really happened, I don't think that's what happened. I perceived it as support, which was a good thing, because I have a lot of friends who have told me horrible stories about the lack of support they received and the really sad things that people say when you're in that situation. And a lot of that's just ignorance. They don't know what to say, so they say something that they shouldn't, instead of just saying, I love you, I'm here, I'm sorry. You know, just I remember telling one friend, just cry with me. Just be here. You don't have to say anything, you know. But it was minimized. At the beginning, it was okay to talk about it. But maybe after 2 or 3 months, it's kind of like, well, here we go again, you know. And when you've gone through grief of any kind, I think one of the things you do is you repeat your story. You know, you have to tell it over and over. It helps it to become real to you. I think one of the things we fear is losing the memory of that one that we loved. Mm-hmm. And with a baby that we didn't know.
June, that is brilliant because, again, we see that in the loss of a friend or a father or mother or a sister or brother and a baby who's lost to miscarriage. My mother expressed some of what you're talking about now when my father died, because she had this great need to continue talking about the man who had been the centerpiece of her life for 42 years.
Yes.
Suddenly he was gone. And a month later, all of her friends and everybody, in compassion, but they wanted her to get beyond it. And they didn't want her to go on talking about him. She needed to talk about him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was her life.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, she can't mention him anymore because it's not appropriate to do so.
Yes.
And that's sort of what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think one of the things we're doing in this ministry is to encourage parents that they do need to do this. I don't think they recognize when they're going through it how important it is to memorialize their feelings, to honor and to journal and to put down in some permanent form the memory of that child.
Did you do it?
We didn't. We didn't have the understanding at the time.
What should you have done?
We should have stopped. We would have had a ceremony at the time. We would have journaled our thoughts and our feelings. Because what happens, of course, is over time, memories do fade. It's just part of who we are as people. And it's important, while they're fresh, to get them down in some way to memorialize those feelings.
In what way? What do you recommend to those that you're trying to minister to?
Well, again, we talk about journaling your feelings and your thoughts.
And we talked
praying about
giving the name to the child and burying the child.
Right. There are some other great things that we know of other people have done. People plant trees in honor of their children. Bulbs that come up around the time that the child was due.
Yeah, a friend of mine did. Her baby was due in the spring, and so she planted bulbs so that in the springtime when the bulbs came up, that would, you know, that was a remembrance of her little baby.
June, tell us a little more about the ministry that you all have started and what you're trying to accomplish.
2 years ago, one of my customers came to me, and she's an NICU nurse at Memorial Hospital here in town. And she said, you know, we're trying to do something special for families who have lost a baby in the NICU. Do you have any ideas? Well, as a mom who had 2 children in the NICU and who, you know, we watch children not make it.
Yeah, that stands for neonatal
intensive care unit. I forget.
Yeah.
But having been through that experience and seeing families grieving the loss of a baby in the unit, it was very close to my heart. And I went to our pastor and said, do you think we could do something here? And threw out my idea, and they just embraced it. And again, it's to honor and remember. I think that's our kind of our key phrase. We want to honor and remember and celebrate their life.
It's a beautiful thing that you've done, because what's really happening is that you have taken your pain and your experience, and instead of being angry at God and blaming God, you have let him use this to minister to his other children. That's a beautiful thing. Russ, talk about the album that you all have put together for families that are going through this.
The album is designed in such a way that it's not just a blank album. It has little headings that help parents think about the kinds of things that will help them heal. We were talking earlier about the plans that we had for that child, the preparations we made, the dreams we had for those children. And so one of those headers is Dreams We Had For You. Yeah. It's important that parents go ahead and experience that and journal. Who could this baby have been? What might they have brought to our family?
I'm Roger Marsh, and you've just heard day one of Dr. Dobson's candid, emotional conversation with Walt and Barbara Larimore and Russ and June Gordon here on Family Talk. As our guest today expressed, after going through something as devastating as a miscarriage or multiple miscarriages, it can be hard to hope again. It can be hard to trust that God is really in control and that he has good things in store for us. You know, when I go through difficult times, I've always found Psalm 34, verse 18 to be of comfort. The psalmist writes, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." Grief is different for every person. If you've experienced the pain of a miscarriage or pregnancy loss, you know that there is no time limit on grief. And if you've never experienced a tremendous loss but know someone who is currently grieving, this might be a good opportunity to be the hands and feet of Jesus to them. Reach out to your hurting friend. Tell them that you love them and that you're praying for them. Offer to bring them a meal or ask if there's anything you can do to make the burden a little bit lighter. One of God's designs for the body of Christ is that we are to be there for one another when hard times come. Now, to learn more or to hear any part of the broadcast that you might have missed today, be sure to visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org/broadcast. And of course, please call us anytime, day or night, and know that we are here to answer any questions you might have about the James Dobson Family Institute, or to recommend a resource for you, or to simply pray with you. Our toll-free number is 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. And remember, you can always write to us. We love to hear from you when you send us a letter. Our ministry mailing address is the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, P.O. Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80949. And bear in mind that the mail is a great, safe way to send a tax-deductible donation in support of Family Talk as well. Again, our ministry mailing address is the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, P.O. Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80949. Now, before we leave for the day, I want to tell you about a special series we've created for moms. After all, raising kids, maintaining a healthy marriage, finding some sort of balance through it all, running a home, earning a paycheck, providing for your family, a mom's work truly never ends. Unfortunately, though, we can't give you superpowers and we can't create more hours in the day, but we can offer you some time-tested truths and encouragements to help you be the best mom you can be. That's why we're inviting you to sign up now for the Empowering Moms series, created especially for moms. Each and every day, you'll receive practical parenting advice packed with timeless scriptural truths and a prayer to renew and inspire you. Now, to sign up, simply go to drjamesdobson.org. It's that simple, drjamesdobson.org. Thanks for listening to Family Talk today, and be sure to join us again tomorrow for the second half of the interview we've entitled Miscarriage, Grieving the Loss. It's coming up right here on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
You've probably heard about the tragic phenomenon known as sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS. It's still taking the lives of about 6,000 babies each year in the United States alone. This killer has mystified medical researchers, but now a new study has been conducted by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission in collaboration with researchers at the University of Maryland and Washington University, St. Louis. The epidemiologist who directed the investigation, Dr. N.J. Shears, said, "We've not found a cause for SIDS, but our results show that specific items of bedding used in the U.S., such as comforters and pillows, were associated with an increased risk for death to prone sleeping infants whose faces became covered. This means that babies should not be placed on their stomachs in soft bedding. This will lessen the likelihood that they will rebreathe their own carbon dioxide that's trapped in the blankets and pillows around them." In about 30% of the 206 SIDS deaths in a research project, babies were found with bedding pressed against their noses and mouths. The advice now being offered by doctors is that parents place their infants on their backs, not on their stomachs, and that a minimum amount of loose bedding be kept in the crib. Following this advice won't eliminate all cases of SIDS, but it could save hundreds, if not thousands, of lives every year.
To find out how you can partner with Family Talk, go to drjamesdobson.org.